Okay, so we're explaining the concept of Das. He says, where does Das come? So if you look at the first time it's in the Torah, Das comes the word via Adam Yoda Es Chavad, end of Perigimel, yeah? That Adam knew his wife. That's what is always translated in English, right? Adam knew Chavad. It means he was intimate with her. What does that mean? Right? Who Loshen, it's an expression of Hiskashrus V'Hischabrus. Connection and bonding, right? Now, what's that got to do with knowledge? So we talk about a person as Chochmah and Binah. So what happens when you experience Das? We know what happens when you experience Chochmah, the newness of an idea. We know what happens when you experience Binah, you're understanding the idea properly. What happens when you experience Das? So let's describe first of all what happens, and then we'll explain why it needs to happen, okay? So first of all, it's like this. He says, Shemekasher Daitoi Bekesher Amitz V'Chozak. What happens is you take your knowledge, your brain, and you connect it with an unbelievably strong knot. You connect to the idea. You start immersing yourself in the concept, right? The Yiska Machshavtoi B'Chozak. And you put your whole thought. You know, V'Yiska, the word V'Yiska is similar to when we like pitch a tent. And you drive the peg into the ground, right? That's what it means. You penetrate. I don't know. You knock it in. So you knock your thought process. You knock it deeply into the idea that you're thinking about. B'chozek, with strength. The gadlus ein sof baruch hu, in the greatness of Hashem. Now he's talking about the nefesh lakis here. He's talking about das and nefesh lakis. So you're thinking you've understood the chochmah. You think about the greatness of Hashem. You learn an idea. You understand the chochmah. You get the binah, right? Now you got to really connect yourself to that idea and immerse yourself so strongly, the Eina Masiach Daitoi, and you're not distracted at all, right? So, it's a very hard thing, this, but Chochmah Bina is more easier. Even Bina is hard, but okay. What he's saying is basically it's an idea that you immerse yourself in the idea so much that you completely get lost in the concept. Completely. Right? I'll give you just an analogy of what this looks like. Not what this looks like. They talk about very, very great Hasidim. So in Tanya, in Hasidus, there's a concept of hisbonimus. It's almost like a meditation, but different a little bit. So the idea is, there was this idea of thinking in your mind, like immersing or reflecting on a concept in Hashem, a godly concept, right? So, for example, there's still a concept of, for example, when you learn, let's say you learn Chassidus before davening, so then you learn, that's the Chochmah Binah process. But then before davening, there's a concept that you spend time before davening reflecting. That's a hard thing nowadays because our attention span is about 7 seconds. So it's a little bit different, right? Difficult, but we need to try. But there were stories of all the Chassidim where they used to completely lose themselves in thinking of Chassidus. So just to give you an extreme example, so you understand what I'm talking about. There was a chassid called Reb Gershon Ber Pahara. Famous chassid. He used to think ideas of chassidus very deeply, and he used to get completely lost in it. And once he went into this complete experience of thinking chassidus, and it was in the afternoon, totally lost track of time, totally lost track of where he was and what he was doing, and he went till the next morning. And he came to when it was getting light, but it was like half dark. And he realized where he is, and he saw it's like darkish. He knew that he started in the afternoon, so he thought it's like coming tonight. And he said, oh, what time's the Shkia? I haven't done Mincha. In the meantime, he'd missed Mincha and Maariv, but okay, so whatever. I mean, I'm sure Hashem forgave him because what he was doing. But this is what it means. This is what we're talking about, right? Going completely immersed in a concept. It takes self-modification. It takes giving up the self, yeah, because what you're thinking about is something higher than yourself. I mean, as always, it can take ego sometimes. It depends what you're thinking about. A person get lost, totally lost in thinking about self-preservation. But not in this case, obviously. Yeah. Okay. So, I'll tell you another story, just like a little, also like people who just, became their whole being, their whole life. So there was a chassid called Rabbi Yomin Kletzker. Rabbi Yomin Kletzker was a great chassid, He's also a businessman, and quite a wealthy businessman, apparently. But he was called Kletzker because he dealt in wood, so he was a lumber merchant, I think they called in those days, right? Basically, they would go to a forest next to a river, they would chop down wood, and they would package them, and then they would send it off in the river to other, I don't know exactly, some sort of boat, right? Anyway, he had a whole team of employees. And one day they were in the forest cutting trees, and he was coordinating it, and he was giving instructions. In the middle, he just got distracted, and he got lost in thinking Chassidus, thinking about Shema Yisrael. He was thinking about the oneness of Hashem, whatever. And they can't move him. They can't disturb him. And they're waiting for instructions. Anyway, a couple of hours later, whatever it was, he came back to the program. So they made a meeting with him, and they said, "This is we can't work like this, right? I mean, if you work, you work. You can't just in the middle go wander off into a different world." So he said, "I don't understand." He said, "How come it's okay when someone is saying Shema and they wander off to their business in the middle of davening? Right? They start thinking about their business. That's okay. But the middle of business, they start thinking about Shema Yisrael. That's a problem." That was his thing. But on the topic, by the way, there was once a famous thing where he was also very focused, and he was doing the books, and he tallied up. He had a whole cheshbon of different numbers, no calculators or computers in those days, obviously, and he tallies them up, and he puts samachay at the end. Samachay means sachakol, total. And he was just connected so much, he put sachakol, total, ein od mulvad, there's nothing else besides Hashem. That's a total. Right, that's a great question. Okay. So what it means, to us, I suppose, it means like when, you know, sometimes when you sort of get immersed in an idea, you lose track of time. You become so connected with the idea, right? Now, why is this so important? So this is the issue. The issue is like this. First of all, what are we talking about here? What's the purpose? Again, we're talking about the Nefesh HaLakis, and he's talking about how a person, for example, delves into and understands the greatness of Hashem, for example, right? What's the goal? The goal in this case is that it's got to give birth to midas, it's got to give birth to love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, right? And here's the problem. The problem is that we know very often when someone can understand a concept very deeply and understand it properly, and it doesn't bring to midas, it doesn't bring to emotion.
It doesn't what?
Bring to emotion. Mm-hmm. Right? I think what they call that cognitive dissonance, right? Why? Because you see, the whole Tanya is based on Moyach Shalit al Alev, that the brain controls the heart, right? Why does it control the heart? Because that's the greatness of the human being, right? The greatness of the human being is that we can think about things that are not our natural disposition, right? So we can change. What's the tool of change? The tool of change is the head. So a person likes to indulge in physicality, materialism, whatever the case is, to the point that he or she might like to do things that are actually harmful for him, even physically harmful, but certainly spiritually harmful. And that's the natural pull, the natural temptation. And yet, through the head, we can think about that. No, it's not important, and it's not good for us. And we can make decisions in our head to do the opposite of what our personality is, right? An animal can't do that. That's the difference between an animal and a human being, right? If you put a temptation in front of an animal, it will be impulsive and will not be able to control itself. Right? So self-control comes from the brain. That doesn't mean, by the way, just a side point, that doesn't mean that a person is defined by his or her intellect. Because we can also use the brain for opposite reasons. We use the brain to rationalize things that are bad for us, right? That's the power of the brain, can be the weakness of the brain also. See, the whole point of the brain is that's not us. Thinking, intellect, right? Intellect, by definition, means I'm importing something from outside of me. I'm allowing an idea that is not me into me, right? So actually, I can allow, that's the power of the brain, it's also the weakness of the brain on many levels. First of all, it's the weakness of the brain because I can allow in many things. I can allow in bad things also, right? A person can decide to give up Yiddishkeit, chas v'sholem, and he can rationalize it because he allowed that to come into his brain, right? So that's why what I say, the seichel, intellect, is the most powerful tool that we have, but it's not us. In other words, that's not what defines a yid, certainly, right? Because what defines us is our inner soul, which is the search for meaning, the search for purpose, the search for connection to Hashem, and so on, right? That's what defines us. But how do we express that? How do we connect to that connection to Hashem? How do we connect to that emunah? That's through our brain, right? Not so much the heart. The neshama is actually the nefesh elokis is actually in the brain, the conscious part of nefesh elokis. We say heart because that's what it feels like, but heart is emotion. That's conscious emotion. I'm talking about the depth, the origin. In fact, it doesn't reside anywhere. It's transcendent. It's a part of our neshama actually that is the foundation of who we are, but it's higher than us. It's what we call makif, right? At the fourth and fifth level of the neshama, the chayin yichida, is what I'm talking about really, and that's actually higher than our consciousness. It's the transcendent part of us, ourselves, right? Chesed and gvura, love and fear, is really the conscious part of our emotion. That's different. But what is, yeah. So that's one weakness of the mind. But the other weakness of the mind is this. What allows us to entertain things that are not a natural personality? What allows us? The brain. Because why? Because intellect allows things from outside into the brain, correct? But that's its downfall. Because I'm not connected to it. I can allow anything in. I don't mind. Right? If you go to a lecture and a very deep intellectual professor talks, you'll know nothing about his personality. Because I can passionately talk about any subject and it doesn't mean that's what I feel. Correct? Insult the guy, then you'll learn about the personality. Right? You'll see how he reacts emotionally. Will he be angry? Will he be kind? That's different. The Gemara talks about three things, how you know a person. Bekisoi, bekaisoi, bekoisoi. You know it from his anger when he gets upset. Bekisoi, bekaisoi. His money, you know, from his how he handles his finance, right? I mean, well, how does a person, you know, a person's personality, how they deal with their wealth, yeah? And Mekoiso, with his alcohol. What happens to him when he's, right? Those are the three things. But Mekoiso is anger. In other words, but you don't know from his brain, you don't know. A person can be very smart. Doesn't mean, you don't know if he's a kind person, a cruel person. You have no idea. Because intellect means you're taking something that's not you. It's distant. It's objective. It's not subjective. Which is a strength and it's a weakness. Right? Nevertheless, we need the brain. It's a very critical tool because we need it to introduce a concept which is not me. In order for me to grow, I need to understand something that's beyond me. Right? But then the problem is, how does it translate into emotion? Emotion is me. That's me. Personality of a person is midas. When you talk about a person's personality, you're not talking about the level, their IQ. You're talking about the EQ. You're talking about their emotional ability to know, right? If you want to describe someone's personality, you're not going to describe their brain. That doesn't tell you anything about them. Right? You want to know about their midas, about their emotions, how they respond to difficult situations, how they respond to other people, how they relate to other people, do they give room for other people, all that kind of stuff, right? Now, when I want to work on my midas, instead of loving pizza, I want to love Hashem. So I've got to learn Hasidus, I've got to learn about the greatness of Hashem, right? But how's that going to translate into avas? How's that going to translate into love of Hashem? Intellect is distance, it's not emotion. How does intellectual concept become an emotional concept? Right? Because we know that there are so many people that know very, very, I mean, there's been, you know, they say, they joke about it, but there's been many, many times where a person get up and give a lecture about the danger of smoking, and the person still smokes. Right? It didn't change his emotion, it didn't change his will at all. Right? The answer is das. That's the answer. What does it mean, das? Das means that you get lost in the concept to such an extent that it becomes you. That's what it means. You connect to the idea. Until you have das, you and the idea are separate. You might understand it very well, but you and the idea are separate. Obviously, there's many levels of das. I gave you an extreme levels before, but I mean, this is the idea of das, right? When it becomes you, then you start to live that way. Then it starts to affect your midas. Hello? There's an interesting idea that's brought down in Altera brings it later in Tanya. But it's based on a Pasuk and a Gemara. So and also the Zohar, what the Zohar says about Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So there's in Zohar it says that Moshe Rabbeinu was Raya Mehemna. He was a faithful shepherd, right? That's one way to translate that phrase, Raya Mehemna. But a different way to translate that phrase, what does it mean? He was a faith, not that he was a faithful shepherd, but he was a shepherd of faith. Very different. In other words, what Moshe Rabbeinu did was, he fed Emunah to the Jewish people.
He was both.
Both are true. Yeah. Right? What does it mean? It means that he didn't have, like the Rebbe explains in the last mimer that the Rebbe gave out, right? The famous mimer, V'atah Tetzaveh, that every Yid has Emunah, right? But the problem is that Emunah is detached sometimes, right? That could be detached for many reasons. First of all, Emunah doesn't necessarily mean intellectual Emunah. Emunah can mean a faith Emunah, but that comes from a part of ourself that's not part of our consciousness. It's not our midas and it's not our seichel. It's not our midas and not our intellect. It's higher than it, it's transcendent, and therefore we don't live by it. Or it can be something we understand and we learned about, but still it hasn't affected us because it's still not who we are. Because it's an intellectual concept, it's detached, right? Which therefore results in the famous saying that you can have ganva apum machtarta rachmana karye. You can have a ganif who's about to break in, a thief that's about to break in, and just before he breaks in, he turns to Hashem and says, "Please help me." He davens to Hashem to help him, right? How can that be? I know we laugh, but the truth is, we all do this to some degree, right? Because we're not always, yeah? So we believe in Hashem, believe everything comes from Hashem, Hashem is the help, and yet we don't always daven for the right things, right? In other words, like this, so the guy, if he's davening, he knows that he believes, because he believes that, but it's not an internalized belief, obviously, because an internalized belief, he would never daven to Hashem to help him break into the house, right? So that means that the Emunah hasn't been internalized, hasn't been maki, it's still maki, it's still encompassing. So Moshe Rabbeinu's job was to feed the Jews Emunah, to feed them, to internalize it, right? Now, it uses the expression sometimes that the Moshe Rabbeinu, he fed the Jews Das, right? He gave us Das, he gave us Das, that's what he gave us. He gave us the ability of Das. What does that mean? It means like this. As being a tzaddik, as being a leader, right? So the Gemara says like this, there's a pasuk in Devarim, right? Where the pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu, before the Jews go into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the Jewish people and he says the following. He says, V'ato Yisrael, he says, now my Jewish people, Mo Hashem alakecha shel mimach. What's Hashem want from you at the end of the day? Like, it's not so hard, this, you know what I'm saying? What does he want? Nothing much, just ke'im le'yiru oisai, to fear him, to go in all his ways, to all the mitzvahs, right? Not that difficult. I mean, that's what he wants you to do, right? Okay. So the Gemara says, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people. The Gemara says, the Gemara asks a question. The Gemara says, "V'chi yira milsa zutra sehi?" What, is fear of Hashem an easy thing? Moshe Rabbeinu is making it sound like it's easy. It's not easy at all. It's very, very hard to fear Hashem, right? And which results in perfect observance of all the mitzvahs. That's not easy at all. So it's a good question, right? But the Gemara then answers something that sounds completely bizarre. The Gemara says, Legabe Moshe Milta Zutrasihi. For Moshe, it was an easy thing. For Moshe Rabbeinu. That doesn't answer the question. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't talking to himself, he was talking to us. Right? So, what's the answer? The answer is, as it says in Kabbalah, Chassidus, and so on, it says that Moshe, every Yid has a nitzutz, has a spark of Moshe Rabbeinu in him. It's not easy, but what the job is to connect to that spark, to connect to the Moshe Rabbeinu in you. When you connect to the Moshe Rabbeinu in you, it becomes easy. Why? What does that mean? How do you do that? And what does that mean? Right? What does it mean that for Moshe Rabbeinu it was easy? Why? Why was it easy for Moshe Rabbeinu? The answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu understood concepts that other people understand too. I shall lower down. Other people understood concepts that Moshe Rabbeinu also understood. It's true, even his Chochmah Minna was way higher than everyone else. But still, I mean, it was in the realm. People can understand. He gave it over. He taught Torah. People understood the Torah, right? What Moshe Rabbeinu had, however, more naturally than everyone else, was Das. In other words, there could be a concept that Moshe Rabbeinu understood and Yankel Berel understood also. The difference is that Moshe Rabbeinu had the Das of that concept. He lived the idea. He was the idea. Once you are the idea, then Yiras Hashem becomes easier. Fearing Hashem becomes easier. right? And that, sorry?
It's not easy.
Correct. That's why in Chassid, especially in Tanya, even where you see in the second chapter, we have this concept of connecting to a tzaddik. That's why we have to connect to the tzaddik, which is the tzaddikim in every generation is the like extension of the Moshe Rabbeinu. Why can't we just learn? Why can't we just learn what it says? You know, why we have the books? What do we need a tzaddik for? For the das. We need the tzaddik to give us das. I mean, that's one idea, right? We connect him. We're going on his wagon. We're going on his sort of thing. So it becomes more who we are. He feeds us das. Right? So that's the concept he's saying. That's this concept of getting lost in an idea, connecting to the idea. He says, like connecting, such a really, you don't distract yourself from it, because then you have a chance of giving birth to midos.
Couldn't it be given the Torah without
Moshe? No, correct. No, the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu is to give it to us. It shouldn't be makif, it should be pnimi, we should internalize it. The hard part is connecting to it. Because why is it not makif? Because what Moshe Rabbeinu has, we also have. We have the Moshe Rabbeinu in us. We just have to reveal that Moshe Rabbeinu by connecting to the Moshe Rabbeinu. We connect the, you understand?
Where is it residing in us at the moment that we can tap into it?
What, the Moshe Rabbeinu?
That, yes.
That's a makif, yeah. But we can connect to it. We can. We have the ability to connect to it. Partly by exercising das over here, and then partly by the connection to the tzaddik, right? Same idea. Because he makes it easier to do that. Right? So let's see it inside. Say it like this. Says the Eina, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines in the bottom. The Eina Masiach Daito, you don't distract your knowledge, your brain at all, your thought at all. That's what das means, right? He says, why is that so important? Even if someone is a chacham or a novain, chacham means he's able to reach chachma. Novain means able to understand bina, and he does it bigdulas ein sof baruch hu. He does it in the greatness of Hashem. So he understands the concepts very, very well. If you won't connect your das, and you won't peg in your thought with unbelievable strength and consistency into the idea, you will not give birth in your soul to a true love or true fear. You'll have sort of like fantasies in your head. In other words, you'll have concepts, but it won't be real. The alkain hadas hu kiyum hamidus v'chayusa. Therefore, das is the upkeep of the midas and what keeps them alive. Without das, it doesn't work. You can have tremendous chokhmah bina, without das, it doesn't work. Right? Now, just obviously, these things happen at different levels. Now, you know, in Tanya, I've mentioned this before, in Tanya it speaks everything in the extreme. Because that's the goal, right? Everything, when it's pure form. I don't know if any of us are shaykh to this. I mean, we know that when he talks about, you should understand, this is very important to understand. When he talks about love and fear of Hashem in Tanya, he's talking about something none of us have ever reached. Right? I'm taking a fair guess here. But we're not talking about getting excited about a mitzvah. That's also a form of love. It's all good in our mind, whatever, but a real Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem is right. I'll tell you a story about that, right? Just so you understand. The word great Hasidim reached this kind of stuff, right? There was a famous Hasid called Rabbi David Horodoka. I'll tell you who David Horodoka was. Horodoka was a Talmud. He was a Bacher in Rebbe Rashab's Yeshiva. Top Chetzmim when it first started, right? Where there was a tremendous... Because, I mean, where you cultivate this, as Alter Rebbe speaks about ladies, in davening you're supposed to cultivate this a bit and so on. Rav Zaka was the year that Taka reached, he really reached love. He just loved Hashem, right? They say he once, right? I think it was him, they say he once had a Fabrein, he took a bit of L'chaim, and he was, you know, a little bit under the influence, so to speak. And he went in the street, and they heard him saying, I love him, I love him, I love him. They say, who do you love? The Eivishter, he said, the Eivishter. He really loved the Eivishter. Now, when I say we can't reach that, because we love other things too. Love is exclusive. You know what I'm saying? Like, you love Hashem means you don't love other things. That's what it means, right? You love Hashem completely. That's all. Your whole life is about is about Hashem in a very real and conscious and emotional way. So to give you an idea of the kind of das that he had, he's another sort of example of this, right? So in Lubavitch there was a time there were like 300 bachrim, and davening was taken very, very seriously, but then there were some bachrim who davened beyond the minyan. There was a special room for them. They were on like the level, they would keep davening, they would love much slower, they would contemplate, they would think Hasidus in the middle, they'd get lost in the davening experience for a good few hours, and they had to get guidance for that, they had permission for that actually, because you had to be on the level. You couldn't just come late to the next part of learning if you're wasting your time, right? So they tell a story that a number of years after the Tochas Mimim was established, the Rebbe Rashab once walked into the room where these extra daveners were deeply engrossed in their davening. And I think there were like 30 bachrim sitting there. They were davening, great concentration. Beyond the minyan. And when they felt that the Rebbe Rashab walked in, they all stopped and they stood. Right? The Rebbe walked in, so you don't stop what you're doing, even if it's davening, and you wait for whatever. Right? Except for two bachrim, and I've forgotten who the other one was, but one of them was Reb Dov Daradok. He was oblivious. He was oblivious to the fact, even that the fact that the Rebbe Rashab was there. And the Rebbe Rashab walked out and he said, for him it was worth the whole yeshiva. Right? But even him, on his deathbed, they tell a story that someone went over to him moments before he was going to pass away, and they said to him, I don't know who said to him, but it's the person who said it to him, he said to him, Nu Reb David, the Grecht Avas Hashem, did you reach Avas Hashem? So he was in a quandary, I think, because he couldn't. Hasidim were never into themselves. They never talked about themselves. They never promoted themselves. It was bittle, right? But he couldn't deny it either. That was a bit of a problem. So his answer was, he said, "Nu a kitzel gitan." He says, a little bit of a tickle, maybe, like a drop. Okay, wasn't a drop, but that doesn't matter. Okay, so then the question is, what's the point of all this? Why are we learning this then, right? So the point is that although we often are not, it's not possible for us to reach the levels they talk about here in Tanya, but even though later on in Tanya it talks about many different levels of Avas Hashem. In other words, we can still apply this in our level, which means we can still try to apply Das. We can learn something and then not just learn it once or twice, but really think about it, learn it over again and again and again and again. And it can make a dent. Will it give birth to full-blown love of Hashem? Not necessarily, but it'll, at least in concept, right? Later on in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about intellectual love, which means we can be more attracted to it. We can be change ourselves a little bit. You know, we become a bit more refined, and we can say, you know, maybe I need to be immersed in materialism a bit less and a bit more about Hashem, right? So it can make a difference. We learn about it in its pure form, but we can apply it to ourselves. We can apply Das to ourselves also, which means if we just keep on learning from an intellectual point of view, it won't have any impact on us. But if we apply the Das idea, will it be full-blown Das? Will it be real Das? Probably not. But it'll be the concept of Das, where we start to live it a little bit to some degree. You see what I'm saying? That's what it's, okay, so he says like this. He says, therefore, Ve'al Kain Hadas Hu Kiyum Hamidus. Therefore, Das is the upkeep of Midas, the Chayushan and the life force of Midas. And therefore, he mentioned an interesting line. He says, "Who koilel," and therefore, because Das really is what connects intellect to Midas, Das is koilel chesed ugvura. Kabbalah says that Das already has in it a component of chesed and a component of gvura. Pirush, which actually means, if you translate it, ahavo ve'anfeho, the yiro ve'anfeho. Love of Hashem and everything that comes from love of Hashem, fear of Hashem and everything that extension by extension, extrapolating everything that comes from here. So what does that mean? It means like this. It means explaining something very, very important. That we find two expressions pop up in Hasidus and in Kabbalah. Sometimes we find the expression of gimel moichim, three components of intellect. Which makes sense to us, because there's three components, Chochmah, Bina, and Das, right? However, very often we find the expression Dalet Moichim, that there are four concepts of brains. There's four brains, there's four components of intellect. So what does that mean? We only have three, we have Chochmah, Bina, and Das, right? But because Das is the link between intellect and Midas, right, Once you start to love something, once you start to live it, you're so connected to it, you start to live it, it's going to result in an emotion. And emotions are primarily divided into two. Chesed and Gevurah. Those are the two primary emotions. Right? In other words, the emotion is going to give birth to is going to be a little bit Chesed, a little bit Gevurah. You're going to love Hashem, you're also going to be in awe of Hashem. You're going to want to connect to Hashem, you're also going to want to stay away from things that are bad for you spiritually. So it's always going to be Chesed and Gevurah. Therefore, Das really can be split into two. And that's why sometimes you find the expression of Dalid Moichim. Right? Sometimes explains the four cups of wine of Pesach that way. That also corresponds to the Dalid Moichim. Okay? So, just the interesting thing, this is very much connected to Tefillin. I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, but Tefillin have to do with the idea of the connection between the head and the heart, right? That's why it's put that way. It's put on the head, it's put on the heart. And action, that's why you have on the fingers as well, right? So the seven, when you put on tefillin, you make seven loops on your arm, right? And then three loops on your hand. We'll get to that when we get to the next parak, why the three loops. But the seven loops of your hand is for the seven midas, right? What do we put on the head? That's the four parches, the four paragraphs of the tefillin, right? But in the head tefillin, I don't know if you know this, in the head tefillin, they're each in a separate box, separate compartment. Not in the hand tefillin. The hand tefillin is one scroll. Right? You know what I'm talking about? No, you know, you don't put on tefillin, that's why. Right? So you know the tefillin have four paragraphs, right? Correct? The inside the tefillin is a scroll. Scroll, right? If I'll show it to you. Why not? That's it.
Give me 1 second. It's nice to see. Good general knowledge. 1 second.
It's hard to take it all in, isn't it?
It is, but it's strange that my chapter 2 didn't follow it.
No,
neither could I.
Well, I thought we were in chapter 3.
Yeah, we were in chapter 3. I'm just going to explain to you about that, so we'll see what I mean in a second. Okay, so you've seen the mezuzah, right? The mezuzah is written in ink parchment and it has two paragraphs, the Shema and the second paragraph of Shema, right? The tefillin has both the hand, another two paragraphs. Basically, tefillin is mentioned four times in the Torah. It's the end of Parshas Boy in Shmoy, right? Where it talks about going out of Mitzrayim, then it says about the midst of sanctifying the firstborn and all that kind of stuff, right? So it's two paragraphs there. Each one mentions tefillin, and those are the four paragraphs of Shema, of tefillin. Now, where they're written is like this. One second. Ooh. Okay. So in the hand tefillin, it's just one scroll, all four paragraphs.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. Like this one is Shema. Here's Shema. This one is the second paragraph Shema, and the first two are this side, is right?
Paragraphs of Shema.
No, not three paragraphs. Only the first two paragraphs of Shema.
Yeah.
And then the other two at the end of Parashat Bo in Shmois.
Okay.
It's one is Kaddish Nikol B'chor, one is V'hayakav Yacha. It talks about basically the firstborn and the firstborn animals, and then it also mentions Tefillin. Right? So it's all on one scroll, and it gets rolled up. Right? So it's the same parchment, like Mezuzah, the same way. It's really exactly the same way. And then it gets put into a box. I'll show you. This is the hand tefillin, right? This is the hand tefillin. So it's one solid box, which is the bottom comes off. It's sewed together, right? And it comes off. There's one hole there, and that's where this hole is very small, and it goes in there. Okay. But the head tefillin is different. The head tefillin. Each one is a separate parchment. Right? There's only one paragraph. So it's four pieces.
And And are they all rolled up together?
No, they're not rolled up together. So I'm going to show you. So in the head, it goes like this. That's why the head, look, you see these, right? It's actually, it's four boxes come together, right? So actually, if you open it up, the thing is actually four separate compartments inside. Okay. And each one goes into, each one's rolled up, actually rolled up very, it's rolled up actually more flat. Goes like flat tile and gets pushed into each paragraph, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what the tefillin is. So four paragraphs. Why four separate paragraphs? So it's the four dalid moichem. It's the four moichem. Chacham, bina, and the two aspects of das. Because that's the whole idea. The idea of putting on tefillin of the head is that it should come down to the heart. That can only happen if you have das, and das that it becomes emotional, becomes who you are. And it's a link in the chesed of Urim. That's that. And I'll tell you a fascinating thing. I don't know if you know this. You know that on the head tefillin is the shin, right? But if you have a close look, if you have a close look at a pair of tefillin, you'll see this side, the tefillin, the shin, is like a regular shin. And as you can see, it's got three things like our shin, right? You see that? Mm-hmm. Yeah? This side, you know, noticing different about the shin?
Four.
We don't have such a shin in the Torah, don't you think? It's handed down from Moshe Rabbeinu, this is how the shin has to be written. Three and four. Why? Because the three aspects of the shin is chacha bina das, but then das divides into two, so you got the shin with the four, which is the four levels of moichem.
Which direction do you put them on?
What do you mean, which direction?
Well, which one does it face?
On the sides. It doesn't face. So you, on the two sides. So you put it like this, and then from either side, this is the bit, right? Mm-hmm. I think it happens. It depends who you're facing. On the right side is the three, and the left side is the four. Right. That's what he says. And that's why he mentions it over here, because it's the dalad moichen. It's the four, which is ava and yira, love and fear. All right. Okay, I think we'll stop here because I'm away for the next 2 weeks, by the way, but there'll still be a share. I'm in New York, Mr. Shem, so a lady will give a share, but it'll be Womitani, it'll be Chassidus, but Chassidus on Shavuos probably. So we'll do that, and then we'll come back, we'll start Perek Dalet.
Okay. Thank you.
Pleasure.